It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero flicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Steven's out of town this week, so it's just going to be me. This month, this is the first. I think this is going to be a mini episode. To be totally clear, had an interview, ready to go. It's a great interview, and you will hear it. But this is one of those weeks where a big superhero movie has come out. The Fantastic Four has come out. And we've talked about it a little bit, but I haven't seen it. And I'm not going. And I'm not planning on going. And I just kind of wanted to tell you why. Because there's a lot of movies that come out. We cover most of the movies that come out. We always cover the Marvel Studios. Sometimes we cover the DC movies. The only time this has ever happened before was Man of Steel. I didn't see it. And I did not see it until it came out on DVD. And I didn't like it. I didn't think I was going to like it from the trailer. But in that episode, if you go back, Steven saw it. And Jimmy Ferrano was our guest. And he saw it. And they explained it to me. The same way that in our Jurassic World episode this week, Steven explained it to me. And I hadn't seen it. Nobody's seen this thing. Where it stands now, it made $11 million on Friday, which is bad. That's really, really bad. They're saying the most it'll make is $27 million, which means it'll open in second place behind Mission Impossible, which is in its second week. This is, by all accounts, a disaster. So what I wanted to do was kind of talk about how it became a disaster, because I've been following it the whole time. And my personal feelings on the Fantastic Four and why I'm boycotting this movie. We have a Fantastic Four episode a few months ago. You can find that. In that one, we really talked about how Marvel was canceling the book. And we tried to stick close to the book. And we talked about all the great things about that book. About Jack Kirby, about John Byrne, about Jonathan Hickman, about Mark Waid and Mark Ringo. And how much I love that book. It's my single favorite Marvel comic. And the reason, and I gave those reasons on that podcast, is when it is done right, it is the greatest thing that comics can do. It balances crazy epic sci-fi conventions with down-to-earth character stuff. And it's basically what Guardians of the Galaxy did as a movie, done as a comic book. And, you know, when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were doing that book, there was nothing that could touch it. Spider-Man was their number two seller in the 60s, and people forget that. The 70s, it wasn't great, but then John Byrne did it in the 80s, and it was their huge, epic book at a time when Avengers was a little weak. So it was the big, epic sci-fi book that you could read. When this book is done well, it's done really well. When it is not done well, it is not good. And that's what we've had with the movies. I actually just had to pause this podcast because I got a call from my friend Joe, who a different Joe that's on the show, but he's a friend of mine that does a lot of lighting rigs and he does a lot of events. So he'll go on tour with bands, but then he'll also do movie premieres and stuff. He's done The Hobbit. He's done a lot of the Marvel movies. He just told me he refused to work the Fantastic Four premiere because he wanted no part of it. And that's, this movie has been bringing that out in people. I didn't go because I don't want to give this movie $10. I don't want to be part of the reason Fox keeps this license. I want Marvel Studios to get the Fantastic Four back because I want a movie that balances the sci-fi with the characters. We have had four Fantastic Four movies. None of them have had the grand free imagination of the book. We had a movie that was never supposed to be released by Roger Corman, which, you know, everyone's seen. If you want to see it, it's very easy. I think it's on YouTube. I saw it on VHS in the 90s. It was had no budget. It was cheesy. And they fought Dr. Doom in a castle. Then we had two movies by Tim Story. And in the first movie, they fight Dr. Doom in Vancouver. which the end of that movie bothers me so much. There's things about the Tim Story Fantastic Four movies that I kind of get behind. Michael Chiklis is really working hard. He's having fun. He's trying to be the Thing. Chris Evans is a totally different character than Captain America. And now that I like Chris Evans more as an actor, I enjoy watching him. Owen Grafford is a decent Reed Richards. Jessica Alba's miscast. But there are flashes of the humor and the characters in those Tim Story movies that do work. I used to say about those movies that every 5 minutes they would do something so right and then completely go off the rails for the next 5 minutes and then come back. And the thing that bothers me the most about that first movie is that they are the characters that save the universe, not just the world. They don't stop muggers in the street. They don't help the army. You know, they go into space, they go into other dimensions, and they stop a monster from eating the world. And in that movie, they fight Dr. Doom in Vancouver, and they fight him because Dr. Doom is mad at them. It's basically a fight between the two of the team and the villain that's completely personal, that wrecks half the city, and then everyone cheers when they capture Dr. Doom. They have no reason to care that this guy is attacking these people. There's no stakes. And that's the problem with both those movies. There's no stakes. And then, you know, they came back for Rise of the Silver Surfer, which is a little better. It's episodic. It kind of goes different places. Again, the stakes are very low considering you're talking about Silver Surfer and Galactus. And then Galactus is a fucking cloud. You know, and at the time they were like, oh, well, we're saving Galactus for a sequel that's never going to happen. And that was at that point where Lord of the Rings had done really well and they had paced things. And all of these movies which hadn't created their sequel yet were just saving things for the sequel. So they were carving out chunks of their own movie and giving people a dissatisfied time. And that's what those Tim Story movies were. They were dissatisfying. So Fox decides they're going to make another one, and they're going to reboot it. All of a sudden, there's trouble. First of all, they announce they're going to reboot this after Sony has fallen on their face rebooting Spider-Man. Rebooting things that didn't need rebooting, showing the origin again, which we didn't need to see. Changing things for the sake of change, and just kind of serving you the same product over again, and assuming you're going to come because of the license. And I said Spider-Man bombed because of that. Spider-Man did that for first movie and tested everyone's patience watching the origin again, but changing things from Amazing Fantasy 15 just so it would be different. You know, Peter's trying to stop blonde bearded guys because that's who he saw kill Uncle Ben. And it tested everyone's patience. I remember sitting in that movie going, well, I guess I have to go through this so I can get new Spider-Man movies. So I'm just going to sit here and wait until we start to do something. And then they did another one, and it was terrible. Amazing Spider-Man 2 is worse than Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 3 is bad, but it's got some things you can kind of like in it. Like, Thomas Hayden Church is a really awesome Sandman. Tobey Maguire is comfortable as Spider-Man. The action sequences are great. There's like two falling sequences. There's a fight between Peter and the Green Goblin where they're flying through an alley and ripping buildings apart, where the camera's following the pieces of buildings. There's another scene where Gwen Stacy falls off a skyscraper that's being torn apart by a crane. And those sequences are amazing. And then for some reason, they bring in the black costume an hour into the movie after Peter's already become a jerk. And then Venom's just slapped on at the end. It's a total mess. Everyone's singing and dancing. It's bad. But the reboots were worse because they were entirely unnecessary. Fox knows this happened and yet says, we're rebooting the Fantastic Four. Even though they could really, other than Chris Evans, they could probably get that cast back. So everyone's already kind of unhappy. And then all of these reports are coming. Then they show the cast, and all four of them look entirely miscast. They're really young, which is following the Ultimate Fantastic Four model, which I'm not personally a fan of. You know, Thing is a skinny little kid. Yes, Human Torch is African-American, which throws people, though no one really wants to say so. Then the most damning thing that came out was Kate Mara said in an interview that they were discouraged from reading any of the comics because they weren't going to use any of them. And then Fox immediately went into damage control. And as we've seen from the final movie, that was absolutely true. You have these great, great comics. You have Marvel is the biggest studio in the world, bigger than Marvel is what Pixar was 10 years ago. By being faithful to their own properties, and you have Fox saying, "We're absolutely not going to do this. We're gonna hire a cast that doesn't look anything like these characters, and we're going to not use anything from the license, and we're going to hire a director that did one film, Chronicle, which I don't like. None of the characters are likable in that film." It had the same problem for me that Heroes had for me of like, oh my God, we have superpowers. You as an audience, isn't that incredible? Look at us having superpowers. And as an audience member, I'm like, yes, I've seen 25 films with people with superpowers. You need to do something else. You know, and found footage. I have a big problem with found footage because found footage always becomes tell, don't show. There's always characters just talking to the camera going, this is who I am, and this is how I feel, and this is my motivation, and we don't see people behave naturally. Everything feels kind of staged for the camera. Everything feels clipped. Nothing breathes. After maybe Blair Witch 1, I haven't really enjoyed a found footage movie, and I've hated most of them. So you have Chronicle, which is a film that I didn't like at all, and that's this guy's only resume, and as it goes on, the reviews are saying that he basically wanted to make Chronicle 2. People didn't want to make Chronicle 2. So he got the next thing he could get and turned it into Chronicle 2, which is pretty far away. I mean, maybe you could turn an X-Men property into Chronicle with the characters being born that way and rather not have an accident happen to them. But the Fantastic Four is not the way to do it. Then you hear about massive reshoots happening, which actually gave me hope because it was like, well, maybe you're improving it because nothing that you're doing sounds like it's going to be good. Then it comes out that Dr. Doom is a blogger, and once again, he is given electrical robot powers from the accident that creates the Fantastic Four, which is the one thing they kept from the Tim Story films, and it's one of the things that doesn't work. And then this trailer comes out, which is just, it looks like Man of Steel, which is another film I don't like. It's gray. It's joyless. It has no energy. They keep showing the same shot of Kate Mara looking over her shoulder and smirking to try to show you that this movie has humor. They did it in every commercial and they did it in every trailer. It was the same shot. It was somebody saying something that was not really funny. And then cut to that shot of Kate Mara to go, look, we're joking. It, again, everything they showed just kind of lessened people's expectations of this film. And it kept going on. And then you started hearing crazy reports like the director berating the crew and destroying the house he was in and being out of control in the studio, taking away from him and locking him out of the editing room. None of this is good press. Absolutely none of this. And whereas I went to both Spider-Man movies, not expecting much, not thinking they were going to be good, but I went because I loved Spider-Man. And I was like, well, maybe I will see something that's never been done with Spider-Man before on film, and that'll be great. And in those films, well, no. I mean, the web swinging and the fighting were the same techniques that Sam Raimi pioneered, but with less at stake. You just didn't. Spider-Man looked like a CG character just flopping around the room. Whereas going back to Spider-Man 3, which is not a good movie, the fight with Peter and Harry, you're still kind of invested in Peter and it feels real and they have weight and the physics are affecting them as they're falling towards the street. It felt like something was really happening in those Mark Webb films. It just looks like a video game. So again, we're marching towards these same mistakes that studios have made before with superhero properties. But and with Spider-Man, I went because I love Spider-Man. It didn't matter. The Spider-Man 2 bombed so much that, as we know, Marvel Studios is getting Spider-Man. And not only is have they cast him and he's going to be in Captain America, Civil War, but then he's getting his own Spider-Man film, which makes me very excited because with Marvel Studios, there have been movies that haven't been that great. Iron Man 2, Thor, Dark World, that have been kind of, but they haven't made a really terrible movie. And Spider-Man's the flagship characters that are going to build him up. So hopefully when this movie bombs, which it's doing, Marvel will get this back. And wouldn't it be great to see the Fantastic Four fighting Thanos with the Avengers? If we're getting these huge epics, and I think they're building up the Thanos to be their Marvel's Lord of the Rings, you know, having every single character in it fighting Thanos. If Captain America 3 is any judge, we're going to get everybody. And that would be a great place to introduce the Fantastic Four in a way that they've already said they're going to introduce Spider-Man into the Marvel Studios. No origin. He's established in that universe. People are going to know who Spider-Man is, which makes a lot of sense because the audience knows who Spider-Man is. We don't have to be reintroduced to this character. We've shown, Marvel's shown with Bruce Banner and Rhodey that we can recast and move on. We don't have to reset everyone's expectations. We don't have to reboot. And film audiences have learned through Batman and James Bond and other characters like Dracula that we can put another actor in there and everybody understands the rules. So we're going to get Spider-Man just enter the Marvel Universe and then he can move on and we can have more adventures that are closer to the book, which is what everyone wants. But Fantastic Four, we're not getting that. And there's also been this attitude of we don't care what the fans think, which was defensive because the fans have been merciless to this for the last year, and the cast has been beleaguered, and the director has been defensive. And then the director tweeted this weekend that people would have liked his movie if the studio left him alone, and there is nothing to indicate that would have happened, but that also just hurts it more. And now this film is the old cliche of success has many fathers, failure is an orphan. There's a lot of finger-pointing going on in this movie. I don't want to be a part of this. So I'm not giving it $10. I'm not giving it 2 hours. If 2 years from now it pops up on Netflix, I might watch it to see how bad it is. If somebody actually buys the Blu-ray that I don't know who would, but if somebody bought it and lent it to me, I would watch it, but I'm not supporting this. And that's the feeling I've gotten from anybody. I haven't talked to anyone who's going to see it. I haven't talked to anybody that wants to go see it. I haven't even heard from people that kind of to see it on low expectations or people that are just easily pleased or Marvel zombies. None of them want to see this movie. And it makes me sad because the Fantastic Four not only is such a personal favorite to me, but it used to be the flagship of Marvel. And it's the cornerstone of Marvel. If Spider-Man is DC's Batman, in many ways he is, the Fantastic Four is their Superman. You know, Marvel never had a Superman, but the Fantastic Four is the first thing that Marvel did. And it was a major hit. And everything followed behind it. And that's what Superman did for DC and for superhero comics in general. And when Superman isn't handled well, people get upset. People are still very upset at Man of Steel. I am not a Superman fan, and that movie upsets me because I feel that it got that character wrong. And I'm a casual fan, and the way it got that character wrong upset me. Now, Fantastic Four, I'm a hardcore fan, and and the way they're doing this upsets me. And I've never seen a film upset everyone to this degree. Now, there are fans that always get angry at every movie. That, you know, there are fans that are always like, they didn't get it right. No matter what it is. You know, there's people that didn't like Age of Ultron. There's people that haven't liked Hulk. There's people that were very upset at Iron Man 3 because of the Mandarin, who, you know, admittedly is a D-list character who has magic rings. But there are people that don't want to let go of their preconceived notions. I'm not like that. If you want to go, if you want to take me somewhere interesting, I'll go with you. I'm not crazy about alternate realities. I'm not crazy about creating a world that that didn't exist before and only exists for the story, because I lose stakes in the character. I was never crazy about the Ultimate Universe because I was reading the regular universe where Peter Parker is 28 years old and everything that happened to him since the 60s affects him in some way. I didn't want to see Peter Parker again, starting up again. And in the Ultimate Spider-Man, spoilers, but they killed him. And it didn't seem to really bother anybody because it wasn't the real Spider-Man. They brought in Miles Morales. And now Miles Morales is a part of the regular Marvel Universe. But other than that, if you want to go a weird direction, I'll go with you. With Fantastic Four, when Jonathan Hickman introduced the Future Foundation, I was fine with that. When John Byrne replaced the Thing with the She-Hulk, I was fine with that. You know, when Mark Waid became made Human Torch, a Herald of Galactus, I loved it. I'm all for taking these characters somewhere new, but when you presented an attitude that you don't care who these characters are, and you're just using them to further your own agenda. In the terms of Fox's studios, it's to try to keep making money with these characters, who admittedly, they haven't made that much money with. It's not the X-Men for Fox. And then you have a director who's just trying to pursue the last film he created and is trying to twist this into something. Yeah, I am angry about it. I'm very annoyed about it. And there is a part of me that wants to see it fail. Because I don't think it's something that helps anyone. It doesn't help the audiences, the casual audiences' view of superhero movies. It doesn't help what Marvel is doing and what they're doing a great job at. It certainly doesn't help the characters. And this is a bigger thing that upsets me, is this movie has been perceived as so bad and so damaging to the brand that Marvel has abandoned the Fantastic Four on every platform that they control. I've never seen this happen before. We've had bad X-Men movies, but the comics continue. Sometimes they ignore it, sometimes they don't. You know, we've had Marvel lean into it. They gave Peter Parker organic web shooters because Sam Raimi did it. They had a weird convoluted story to explain it, and then he went back once fans didn't like it. I've seen a lot of weird out there movies come in and the comics ignore it and go, well, we'll just keep going. But with this, there was a comic where they blew up the cast. Marvel canceled the Fantastic Four. They have never done this in the 50 years that they have run this property. This comic has been produced monthly. They sold it to Image at one point and didn't miss a month. They made sure that Marvel had their last issue out 30 days before Image put out their first issue. This was a book they've always cared about. And there have been not great runs, but they've always put this book out. And before this movie comes out, which is a goddamn movie, it's the kind of thing that 20 years ago, comic companies dreamed about actually making it happen. At a time when Warner Brothers had stopped making Superman and had not made Batman yet. At a time when Marvel had sold their rights to everybody who couldn't make a movie out of their properties, who could make a Howard the Duck or a Captain America straight-to-video movie or a Punisher movie that was a rumor for years before it leaked on video. To have a blockbuster-sized movie that cost over $100 million to make, this was the dream of every comics company. Marvel has turned their back on the very characters that are in this movie because they hate this movie that much. They, as I said, they canceled the book. Admittedly, not the best run of the book. And sometimes you do take a break. Iron Man's taking a break of 3 or 4 months before they're relaunching it as a bigger book. Fantastic Four, there are no future plans for them. So when Secret Wars ends, there's no Fantastic Four book. In fact, they have split up the characters, and Human Torch is going to be in one of the Avengers titles. And I think Thing is in another one of them. You know, they're not killing them off because they know there's value in them, but they don't want any product out with Fantastic Four in it. When Rise of the Silver Surfer came out, I wasn't looking forward to it because the first film wasn't great and it was the same director and the trailer looked a lot like the first film, and it was. But I remember saying to people, I'm looking forward to the Fantastic Four movie because I know there'll be a lot of product out. It won't be movie-based, but I know that Marvel will put out an omnibus of Jack Kirby comics, and they'll do more masterworks of the later stuff, like the John Buscema stuff. And Marvel Legends will do a line of Fantastic Four characters, and they didn't do a lot of characters in the main line, but they'll run a classics line. And all of that happened. There'll be a new animated series. Wasn't great, but there was. There was all of this ancillary product to capitalize on the bigger name recognition. Not only is there not that, there are no figures. There are no mini-mates. And mini-mates have traditionally been the only figure property making X-Men stuff. Marvel Legends doesn't really make X-Men stuff. The last Wolverine movie, they made some comic figures just to tie in that weren't directly connected to the movie, and then Days of Future Past, there was nothing. But Minimates did First Class, and Minimates did The Wolverine. There's no Minimates of this Fantastic Four movie. And there's no toys of comic versions of these characters. Like, Marvel has gone out of their way to make sure that you don't see the fucking thing on any products while this movie is in theaters. And that is a huge amount of corporate spite, but it also shows how little faith they have. They don't like Fox. We know this. They don't like that they have the X-Men license. But they respect the fact that the X-Men movies make money. They're not canceling the X-Men comics. You know, they keep a distance from them. You know, we had a Marvel Select Hugh Jackman Wolverine for the last movie. We had nothing for Days of Future Past. And I think Marvel would admit that most of the X-Men movies are pretty good. And I'm saying this a week after we got the Deadpool trailer. And Marvel didn't fall all over themselves to announce the Deadpool trailer, but we had Conan O'Brien devote half of his show to showing this trailer, to having Ryan Reynolds as his guest for two segments, and then showing a red band trailer, which they have never done on television. And Conan went TVMA for that one night, and they cursed plenty to take advantage of it. They made Deadpool an event. Deadpool is a Fox movie. It's connected to the X-Men movies. Nothing has been done for the Fantastic Four. No, Conan O'Brien did not have the cast of the Fantastic Four. It as guests is one segment. And this is a cosmic bomb of huge proportions. And there is a part of me that wanted to go. There's a part of me that wanted to go and wanted to make fun of it. That wanted to get one of the regulars on the show to go with me to a matinee, spend the least amount of money possible, maybe not even buy popcorn in the theater, and talk about how stupid it is. And then the reviews that I read were saying, it's not just that it's stupid, it's boring. It just goes on and on. And it seems the budget was small enough that they spend the whole movie in a bunker. They don't go into space. They go to the negative zone, which is an idea from the Ultimate Fantastic Four comics, but they don't meet Annihilus there. They don't fight monsters there. You know, they fight Dr. Doom at the very, very, very end of this thing. They mostly sit around talking. It's something I don't want to be a part of. And I guess the last point I'll make about it, and this is more of a half episode than a mini episode, is we're at a point now where we don't have to support every comic book movie that comes out. And that might sound blasphemous to some of you, but there's too much. Those of you guys that go back as far as I do, as I was saying before, we had Superman and that's all we had. We had Christopher Reeve's Superman, and that was it. And then he finished, and there was a couple of years of nothing, and then we had Batman. And then Batman slowly wound down in the ground over four films. And we had, at the tail end of Batman, we had a couple of things. We had The Crow. We had Steel. which was terrible. We had some indie comics like The Rocketeer. Dick Tracy comes out in the 90s because after Batman hit, they weren't sure if it was superheroes or anything that came from a comic strip, because Roger Rabbit had also been a hit. So they were like, maybe it's anything cartoons. And we got The Phantom, and we got The Shadow. We got a lot of pulp heroes at that time. And none of them were big. They were all kind of small movies. The Mask, which was one of Jim Carrey's early hits. We had a lot of all of these weird disorganized stuff. We had nothing for Marvel until Blade, which comes in right at the end of the Batman run. And with Marvel, it's a slow build, because people didn't know Blade was a comic book. In the same way, they didn't know Road to Perdition was a comic book. We had Blade, and then we had X-Men. And X-Men was a somewhat small film. It came out towards the end of the summer. It's not a huge budget, but it did well, and that opened the doors for Spider-Man to get made. And once Spider-Man was made, and Spider-Man came out against Star Wars and won, that's when the era of superhero movies really begins. And we're at a period now where we've seen just about all of them. You know, every A-lister has had his own movie and has brought a lot of his characters. Batroc the Goddamn Leaper was in a huge blockbuster movie. We're at that point. We're also at a point where we are putting out a big comic book movie every couple of months. I mean, they rebooted the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We're at a point where you don't have to support every single thing that comes out. You know, I was excited to see The Rocketeer and The Crow because they were comic book movies, and they were not comic books that I read, nor were they particular great movies. People loved The Crow in 1994. Go watch it now. If you finish it, leave me a comment on the Facebook page and tell me what you thought when you finished it 20 years later. We didn't have great, great movies, but you supported them because you wanted comics to get out of the ghetto of public opinion. We are also not in the 90s. I worked at a comic book store. I got my first couple of jobs running comic books. My life was consumed by comic books. And yet on the train, when I would read a comic book on the train, I would kind of lean into my knees. I didn't want people to see the cover of it, because people would give you dirty looks. They would. It was still seen as something that was childish. It was, you know, you don't watch Sesame Street if there aren't children in the room. That's how comic books were seen. You know, and everything we liked about it up until the mid-80s was geared toward children. You know, we watched reruns of the Super Friends, and it was made for five-year-olds. And why did we watch reruns of the Super Friends? Because Captain Cold and Green Lantern might show up. And now we're at a point where there's so much of it, and television included. If we talk about television, there's no way anyone can keep up with everything. You know, if I watched every comic book show that was on, just live action, I wouldn't have time to watch shows I really love, like Key and Peele or Marin or Louie, you know, shows that I look forward to all week. I wouldn't have time because I'm watching, you know, iZombie and Arrow and Gotham and Flash and Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead and Constantine when it was on and Daredevil on Netflix and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Jessica Jones. And they're on every week. No one can keep up. And I'm not even including the animated series. In the 90s, I was in college, and I felt a little silly about it, but I would get up at 7:30 every Saturday morning, and I would have a stack of VHS tapes, and I would stay on Fox, and I'd swap the tapes out, and I would tape X-Men and Spider-Man and The Tick and Batman the Animated Series every week, and yeah, they were worth it. Spider-Man and X-Men haven't held up quite as well. They're not as badly dated as Super Friends, but they're not classics. The Tick and Batman are great. Batman is, you know, Batman's like Looney Tunes at this point. It's timelessly good. The Tick was great, especially at that time when nobody was doing that kind of stuff. But they were kid shows. It was on Fox Kids. They were rated TV-7. And there were times where I felt a little silly that I was in my 20s still watching cartoons. We don't have that mentality anymore. If you want to watch you know, a PG-13 Bruce Timm Gods and Monsters, you can. If you want to watch Ultimate Spider-Man, you can. If you want to watch Teen Titans Go, you can. We have all of these different avenues for superheroes on television. We don't have just Super Friends or just Batman the Animated Series or just X-Men anymore. So we don't have to watch these properties that, frankly, are not aimed at us. I watch Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Assemble sometimes. Sometimes Hulk Agents of Smash. Now Guardians of the Galaxy is coming. That's four Marvel shows that are on Disney XD. And when I watch them, I realize that they're talking to my son. They're not talking to me. And he enjoys it, and he's supposed to. I don't enjoy it. I'm not supposed to. There are other things for me. I can watch The Walking Dead. He can't. We have all of these avenues open to us. And we have all of these different ways we can consume superheroes. You know, and in comic books, people worry about this waiting for the trade mentality. Or they worry about downloading it onto the iPad versus buying a monthly copy. When you get down to it, the comic companies don't care. What they found is that the people that are downloading the comic weren't buying the monthly comics to begin with. The people that are buying the trade weren't reading that series every month. We're opening up new audiences every day, and you don't have to feel responsible for being every audience for superheroes. It feels odd. It feels like your kids are moving out of your house sometimes. Like, I'm not directly responsible for watching every version of Spider-Man because I'm afraid that if I don't lend my dollar support to Spider-Man, Spider-Man will go away. Spider-Man's not going away. And the Fantastic Four is not going away. This is as close to gone as these characters will ever get. Unless 50, 100 years from now, everyone's decided they don't like superheroes anymore. We may not have comic books in 50 years, but I think we'll have superheroes, and I think the Fantastic Four will be there. So I'm not going. I recommend you don't go. I have heard no evidence that you'll enjoy it. So why sit through something you don't enjoy because it reminds you of something that you do enjoy? You don't have to.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, I'm actually going to talk about something that's happening in the future, which I've never done, but I've been invited because of the podcast, because you guys listen to us, so thank you. Been invited to go to the Chicago Nerd Comedy Festival next week. It runs from August 13th to August 16th, and it's at Stage 773, which is 1225 West Belmont here in Chicago. So if you're local, if you live in Chicago, it'll be a three-day festival, and it sounds great. It's being headlined by Dan Telfer, who I saw open for Paul F. Tompkins years ago and really, really liked him, who's a local guy who now lives in L.A. He's headlining, but not only are there stand-up sets, there's a lot of improv. The Star Trek improv group is playing Saturday. I've always wanted to see them. There's a lot of really cool individual kind of projects, and it's the kind of thing, one of the kind of things I love about Chicago. And I talk a lot about being from New York in terms of being in Chicago, and then there is a cultural difference. But one of the things that's cool about New York is that there's every kind of culture there, and if you want to just tap into it, you can tap into it. When I did stand-up, I didn't see anyone to play guitar, and when I played in bands, I didn't see anyone who did stand-up. And when I was doing comics, I didn't see anybody who did comedy or bands unless they came with me. So, and that's one of the cool things about New York. That's one of the reasons people move there. In Chicago, it's a smaller city. So you got to really dig to find those pockets. But those pockets are really rewarding, and they're really tight. And that's one of the things I love about this show, is becoming part of the Chicago nerd community. And, you know, having people I've never met before on the show, and then becoming friends with them, and then they connect us to other people that then come on the show, or then we go to. And this is one of those things where it sounds great. I haven't been in a I haven't been in a stand-up club. I haven't seen any stand-up since Mark Normand was on our show last year. We saw him perform that night at Zanies. He killed. He was fantastic. But I haven't seen a lot of comedy since. I love seeing live comedy. So I'm really looking forward to this show. Hopefully, we'll maybe meet some people that we can have on the show in the future. That's one of the great things about going out into the community and trying to talk to people. But regardless, we'll on our next show, or next couple of shows, I want to talk about what that experience was. But you don't have to just listen to me talk about that experience. There's tickets still available. Tickets are $15. And it's right on the north side of Chicago. So it's the kind of thing where if you're a lot like me, which is slightly introverted but very excited about creative people, it takes a little effort to get out. You know, it's very easy to be on the internet and watch TV and receive this kind of entertainment and self-expression. It takes a little effort to go out and be there and meet people, and maybe they might like me, maybe they won't like me, and I don't know until that happens. And those voices kind of talk to you when you're on your way to kind of a bigger thing. I get a little edgy around C2E2 time because of that, because there's going to be thousands and thousands of people, and I don't know who's going to be nice to me and who's going to be rude to me. But, you know, I made friends at that show, and I've had interesting experiences every year. So I'm really looking forward to next week. And I definitely think you guys should go. So that's a pre-plug for a show that's already been pretty kind to us. The other thing I just want to mention that I loved was the last Daily Show. It was, I choked up more than I thought I would. The Daily Show and Jon Stewart has been kind of a fixture. And Jon Stewart is kind of been a fixture in comedy since I got very interested in comedy. And he was in New York around the time of his MTV show. I thought he was really cool, and he would show up in bars where my friends were, and sometimes I would talk to him. I never met him, but he always was kind of a fixture in New York, but not on the pedestal that Letterman was. So Letterman was part of the older generation, so he was kind of our Carson. And Conan was kind of this guy that came from outside. He came from all these things we loved that we didn't realize people had done, like writing on SNL but not performing, and writing for The Simpsons. Or Louis C.K. kind of writing for Conan and Chris Rock and then bubbling up to who he is now. Jon Stewart was always kind of there as himself, even in the 90s when he wore leather jackets and his hair was completely brown, and he was kind of cool. Like, you always knew about him. I went to The Daily Show in 2005 before I got into stand-up and got to see it firsthand. And Billy Connolly was the guest. And it was a great experience. It was one of those first times I saw how television was made, and it had an impact on me. You know, that John came out and talked to us before, and he had Paul Parenza, I believe, warm up the crowd at that point. And then he came out and talked to us and kind of got everybody in the movie for the show. And then when the show was over, he explained to us that they needed to do some extra bits for Europe because they packaged the show differently. And we got to see that happen. And it was kind of those experiences that when Mike Brum, who was on the show, who wrote for Colbert, would talk to me about the Colbert Report, and as he talked to all of us on this show, that was always my reference point. So seeing him leave, I wasn't expecting to have an emotion about it, because The Daily Show is kind of a counterpoint to the cynicism and the duplicitous nature of the 24-hour news channel, no matter what side you're on. In the later years, they really made it their message not to attack the other side of the party. It's not that they were a left-leaning show and attacked conservatives. They were the counterpoint to Fox News, and they really attacked the media coverage. They also attacked CNN, but Fox News really became their rival. So you saw the show as a combative relationship, and people would come and go. People would be correspondents on that show, and then they would become huge somewhere else. You know, your John Olivers and your Steve Carells and your Stephen Colberts and your Larry Wilmores and your Lewis Blacks. And they all came out on this show, and it was really affecting to see everyone. But I read all these articles about how an era was gone, how how an era had changed. And for me, it seemed like a generational shift. Because as I said, he's just a little older than me. And he seemed to be in the inner circle of a community I walked around. And part of it was watching him age, like going from this young Gen Xer with the floppy brown hair and watching his hair get gray and start to slick back and becoming more involved with politics and meeting the president and having him on his show, that it was a part of our generation becoming the establishment. And to see that step down, it's kind of facing your own mortality. Trevor Noah looks a lot younger than Jon Stewart and a lot younger than me. And is he going to be the millennials host? We won't know until it starts. But it really affected me, especially at a time where we've seen so many talk show hosts leave. It's become almost a genre. You know, we talked a lot about Letterman leaving, but there was Conan leaving The Tonight Show. There was Craig Ferguson leaving his show. There was Colbert just left his show in December. You know, I'm getting used to watching talk show hosts leave their jobs, which doesn't sound like a thing that you will really even care about. But then witnessing it, you realize how much you do. And it becomes this goalpost to kind of show where you are in life and how the future is always uncertain. And that's a weird place to leave this show. But leave it I will. This was almost a full episode of me just talking, which scares me. Do I really need other people in this room? Well, now that you've listened to it, you know if I do. But if you want to see what else I say, you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. And you can like the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page, which is where we post the news, like the Deadpool trailer. You can listen to us on Stitcher if you don't like iTunes. If you do like iTunes, we're on there. Or you can listen to us directly at caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. Every now and then I find out we're on another podcast network that just aggregates, and I don't know who they are. But yeah, this was an interesting experiment. I hope it worked. I doubt I will listen to it myself. It's a little too much me for my tastes. But I'll be back next week. And we'll either run an interview that we had, which is a really good one, or Stephen will be back to talk about whatever happens during the week that we need to address immediately. But either way, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.